Welcome to Twist and Sprout, episode number one, Connecting Well-Being Through Community Farming, brought to you by the folks at Bazavaran Community Farm. I'm your host, Carl Group, and I'm glad to have you here. Today we're chatting with Yvonne Thompson, founder of Change Innovators, a leadership development and coaching company with 20 years experience in building leadership capabilities worldwide across a multitude of industries and sectors. She is author of two books, Creating the Accountability Culture, The Science of Life-Changing Leadership, plus Spiritually Aligned Leadership, Becoming Self-Centered. Yvonne, welcome to Twist and Sprout. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks for having me. It's great.
Welcome. Icebreaker question. Favorite vegetable, how do you prepare it?
Oh, love it. Broccoli, actually.
Broccoli.
Broccoli. And I cook it really quickly in very hot temperature with a little bit of salt. So yeah, either in a frying pan or an oven, real, real quick with just a tiny little bit of oil.
So very simple.
Very simple. It's still really crunchy when it gets to my plate. It's great.
So the crunch is the secret.
Well, for me. Not everybody likes their veggies crunchy, but I do.
Terrific. So we got a glimpse of Yvonne Thompson, the professional. Can you give us a helicopter view of Yvonne Thompson, the human?
Oh, wow. I've been on a really long life journey of self-exploration and understanding how I show up in the world and whether it serves me and whether it serves others. And it started probably about 15, 20 years ago, well, maybe even longer than that, 20 years ago. And it's, you know, it's, there's no destination. It's just, it continues every day of doing the work, understanding why I get triggered, why I have a story in my head, why I might have a judgment. How do I get rid of that?
Right.
So that's sort of been my mission for a really long time.
But you started your company 20 years ago. What was before the 20 years ago?
Yeah, I grew up in a big family with a very domineering father who, you know, was, in all intents and purposes, a good dad, provided really well. We had a very safe home. But I, you know, I was at the bottom of a large family and felt a bit lost and never really felt like I fit in. Mm-hmm. And many years later, discovered through a conversation with my mother that I was actually not wanted. And that back then you couldn't do anything about it were her exact words. So that was hard. That was really hard. But it actually was the greatest gift one of the greatest gifts my mother gave me was a deeper understanding of why I had that feeling of rejection and that feeling of not being wanted. And that led me through to where I am today of finding myself and loving myself and appreciating the gifts that I have and learning through that journey and then sharing those learning lessons with others.
That energy, does that become tiring at all? Do you reserve time for yourself also?
Always.
Right.
Always. Top priority. I matter. Top priority.
What do you do to sort of re-energize?
So
recalibrate.
I garden.
Okay.
I have an allotment here.
Here at the farm.
Love it. I started off volunteering in the fields, harvesting on Thursdays when I moved here. And loved it. And then eventually got an allotment. So, and then I volunteer to cook here. So for me, that's very meditative. It's very, I like to be alone. So I go into the cookhouse, the kitchen by myself and prepare a meal. And I have a very, very rigid meditation practice that is about an hour and a half every morning at about 5 a.m. It's critical to my well-being.
Right.
And it's very personal.
How many years have you been here with the allotment?
Oh, I've only had the allotment for about 10 months.
Oh, really? So you're new?
Really new.
Oh,
yeah.
All right. Do you have stuff growing right now?
A couple of little things, but I haven't put much in the ground yet.
Right. Get ready for the wind.
Yes. Yes. I've experienced it.
We tried broad beans last year and the entire plant, all of them just got decimated by the wind.
Yeah. Somebody said to me the other day when I was there on the weekend that until April is over, you can't really put anything in because the wind will just knock it down.
Yep.
So I have restrained myself, but I have all the seedlings going at home and I can't wait to get them in the ground.
Welcome to West Cornwall. Terrific. Use the term self-centered in the title of your book, Spiritually Aligned Leadership, Becoming Self-Centered. It feels somewhat Ayn Randian to me, as in her book, The Virtue of Selfishness.
So for me, self-centered, and in the title of the book, is very different from selfishness.
Yes.
We have, many of us, since the Industrial Revolution, have been taught in our families and our societies, and in work,
yes,
that we have to take care of everyone else, that we're, you know, it's very much an outward energy that we need to be there for our families. We need to be there for our children. We need to be there for our employers. And my experience has been in the work that we do that people have lost themselves along the way and don't actually know who they are. They don't have self-care practices. They don't take time for themselves. They're busy being a parent and an employee and a manager and a boss and a community volunteer. So the goal around being self-centered is about actually taking time to center, to learn who I am and what it is that matters to me. You know, what is, you know, the definition of happiness is so interesting, right? Or the definition of success is so interesting. And our societies have taught us that, you know, success is a straight line, right? Go to school, be a good person, get married, have the white picket fence, all of those things, and get a great job and contribute to your employer and everything will be great. Well, life is not a straight line. It's very, very messy. And so our ability to take time to get to know ourselves. And I think one of the things that's really interesting about this is COVID forced everybody to slow down and do that reflection. And now we're seeing a huge surge of people very interested in learning about themselves and starting to reflect on what matters to me and what does success look like for me and what is happiness for me. So that's really what the intent is in that language. You know, centered is about actually knowing who I am, knowing what matters to me, knowing what makes me happy.
Yeah.
And centered is a really key word there, self-centered. And so unfortunately, it has some negative connotations, but that is not the intent in that language.
Yeah. In reading through your literature, I felt you have a very succinct illustration of the role of self within family, work, organizations, or even society. First, there is what you describe as the pathway to well-being, which moves from feelings to consequences, or outcomes, actually, as I learned today. Could you tell us how you came about that?
In my own work, for my own personal work, was understanding that the thought, I started to get really curious about the thoughts that I have, you know, becoming the observer of who I am and the thoughts that I have and how those thoughts create feelings and emotions, and then how those emotions affect me physically, and how those emotions then affect behavior. So we'll often say to people, you know, do your thoughts affect the outcomes you get? And we ask those questions so that people can reflect and say, well, I don't know, maybe they do, maybe indirectly, I'm not really sure. And then we play it out. We say, well, do the thoughts you have affect how you feel? Do they affect your emotions? And the answer is almost always, yes, absolutely. So do the emotions that you have then as an outcome from those thoughts, does that affect your behavior, the actions you take? And the answer is yes. So ultimately, those behaviors and outcomes affect the outcomes that we get, the results that we get. So what it does is it allows us to slow down and start to think in terms of self-responsibility. People will say, well, I can't control the thoughts in my head. And I'm like, oh, well, then who does?
Right.
There's we've lived in a society where there's a lot of others need to take care of me. My government needs to look after me. My healthcare system needs to look after me. My schools need to look after me. This is really about a deep understanding of personal and self-responsibility. The thoughts that I have really do affect how I feel and my emotions. And we know that emotions, the thoughts that we have, will trigger adrenal glands to produce all kinds of hormones that then either make me feel really good physically or make me feel unwell physically. And that then confirms that feeling. So I'll give you a really simple example. I'm really angry at my neighbor.
My neighbor's done something. I'm really angry at my neighbor. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is those thoughts about being angry with my neighbor produce, triggers the adrenal glands, produces cortisol, produces sometimes adrenaline. It depends on what's going on, what those thoughts are. And that makes me feel uncomfortable, which confirms I do need to be really angry at my neighbor because now I don't feel good. And it's my neighbor's fault that I don't feel good.
Right.
See the connection. So when I understand that my thoughts are making, are triggering my body to produce certain hormones that actually physically make me feel unwell. And then the other piece that's really interesting is the brain doesn't work very well when it's on a lot of cortisol.
Yeah.
The prefrontal cortex is not functioning. It's been hijacked. The limbic system in the brain is now taking over. And what happens is I'm going to have bad behavior. I'm probably going to say or do something potentially. And so I, for me, this was a really important understanding that if I could start to understand those thoughts and how the thoughts that I had affected how I felt, then I could start to, I wanted to have better feeling thoughts. I would often refer to better feeling thoughts. How could I change that thought to something that feels better?
Is there a point where the person trying to practice the pathway of well-being or to well-being, does he or she slow things down in that instant and look at everything and assess it before reacting?
Yes.
Is that what you're
communicating? Yeah, so it's practicing specific tools about observing. What is it that triggers me?
Because in today's tech society, we're on our phones and everything. Do you think that we're constantly on high then, that society is driven all the time at its highest level?
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, we are in a tough place. There's no question that there's a lot of overstimulation with mm-hmm. social media. The thing about it is that we do, you know, we can give our power away mm-hmm. and overreact constantly by being on social media, or we can slow down. And it's interesting because when we work with most of our work is in the corporate world.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things I will often say to CEOs is we're going to teach your leaders to slow down. And you can imagine, you know, the CEO's first reaction is what, you know, but it's really, really important for proper brain function. You can't, if you're always on high running as fast as you can at breakneck speed, it's much more likely that your brain will be hijacked, you know, that your reptilian or limbic system will be hijacked and then you're not thinking clearly. Mm-hmm. So our ability to slow down and take a deep breath and observe what's going on to my physical body, to the emotions that I'm feeling, to the hormones that I'm creating inside my body is really, really important. And those are specific tools. So the answer is yes, we do have a lot of overstimulation. My encouragement always is step away, slowing down, doing things that actually make us feel good and starting to understand what that is. What is it that makes me feel good? Is it right. coming to the farm and digging in the dirt? You know, is it going for a walk on the beach? Mm-hmm. Is it having a cup of tea with a good friend? Is it reading a really good book? So we have to retrain ourselves.
And does that then feed back or loop back to what you're talking about in terms of self-centeredness, that's the self-centered aspect that needs to be brought in?
Yes. Yes. And it's a practice. It's not something that happens automatically or overnight.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I will often say to people, you know, create a gratitude journal every night, 15 minutes before bed. There's lots of suggestions.
Yeah.
We make a long list in this workshop where, mm-hmm. you know, we make a long list of suggestions that people can do mm-hmm. In order to become centered, to actually get to know themselves. And the more we do those things, the more connected we become with ourselves.
That's really interesting because as of this year, I started documenting three things that are positive in my life every day, even if the sun's out or whatever.
Perfect.
Or, you know, my wife's made me a great meal that I've come home to or something. Like, it can be the smallest thing. Our cat gives me a furry purry, rubbing along my leg and saying hello. And when you add up and you look at these things at the end of the year and you record how many positive things have actually happened, it does put you into a mindset that without doing that, you tend to just forget these things. And rereading your own life story through those little three points, in my case, those three points definitely give a reference point for then the future aspect of things.
Yes, Absolutely. One of the other things we have encouraged people to do along those lines is what we would call a gratitude journal.
Yes, you're saying.
Or a gratitude jar. Oh. So you have a nice little decanter on your kitchen table or on your counter, particularly if you have children. And at dinner time, everybody writes one thing down that they're really grateful for and they put it in the jar.
That's a great idea.
And you fill that jar up. And then one day, one of your kids comes home and they've had a really tough day and they're crying and they've maybe been bullied at school or somebody has really hurt their feelings. At that dinner table, you dump the jar out and you have a look at what's in that jar.
Okay.
This is exactly what you're referring to. It's our ability to slow down and recognize all the things that we have. Now, that in itself changes the neural connections in our brain. And that's what we're doing. You know, we need to understand that we've been conditioned for a long time to look for the bad things in the world, the negative things in the world, the things that people do that I don't like. But what if we rewired our brain to look for the things in people that we do like?
Yes.
You know, that we gave positive regard to our neighbors and to the people that we work with, even if they're never going to be our best friend or that we disagree with something they do. Mm-hmm. So this is what it's about. And it's not just about positive thinking. It's actually about changing the way the brain functions.
The term you use on your website and some of the videos is neuroplasticity. Can you... Is this a point where you could expand on that?
Yeah, it's a perfect place. It's a perfect place. So neuroplasticity is a term that is used to describe how the brain changes over time. So the simplest way to describe it is when we used to, many years ago, we believed that the brain, you were born with a certain number of brain cells, neurons in the brain, and that didn't change over time. Mm-hmm. Same with our genes, that genes didn't change over time, that you're kind of born with your genetic coding. But we now know that that is not true, that the brain is constantly creating new neural connections based on what we learn, what we teach. So when you learn to do something new, we're creating a new neural connection in the brain. Now, we may have connections in our brain that say, I need to judge everyone around me. I was raised in a really judgy family where mom and dad judged everything and I grew up judging everything. But it doesn't serve me and it doesn't make me feel good. I'd like to stop that and I'd like to let people be who they are without me judging. I can actually practice a new skill. The more I practice not judging and catching myself, what happens is I begin to create a new neural connection that says, I feel better when I don't judge. Right. I'm really proud of myself when I catch myself judging. Now, that old neural connection of going to judgment right away, if I don't use it, it actually prunes away and it's not as accessible anymore. Mm-hmm. So a real simple example, I used to have a horrible fear, a true anxiety about flying for a very specific reason, right, which I won't share today. But when I started my business, I had to fly all the time. Mm. I could barely drive by the airport without going into a full panic attack. I rewired my brain. I trained my brain to understand that flying was really safe, that it was safer than driving. And I would get onto the airplane and I would imagine the pilot and co-pilot, they were the best ever trained in the whole world and they were there specifically to get me safely to my destination. The more I did that, the neural connection in my brain that said that flying was unsafe actually pruned away and it wasn't accessible to me anymore. And over time, that neural connection that said flying was really safe became hardwired. Mm. Neurons that fire together long enough will wire together. Yeah.
You also make a case for moving the self off of autopilot to function within the community with deliberate intention. I love that term. Can you unpack that and what it means?
Yeah, it's about understanding how I want to show up in the world and being really intentional about that. So when if we're working with senior leaders, for example, we'll often ask, do you know what your impact is? Do you know how you leave people feeling when you leave a room? What do they say and how do they feel? So our ability to be very intentional and deliberate in the way that we show up in the world, the way we interact with people, the way we communicate with people, the words that we choose, it all really matters. And we can't be deliberate in the way that we show up in the world if we are running at breakneck speed. So this, constant, as you referenced earlier, social media, In the corporate world, it's overloading people's plates so that they're trying to accomplish 12 hours worth of work in 9 hours before they go home. You know, it's the working on the weekends. There's no downtime. We cannot be intentional human beings if we're constantly on. Mm-hmm. And so the focus is on, number one, evaluating, who do I want to be? Do I know what my impact is on people in the broader community, whether it's the farm or it's, you know, in the business world or in my, or with my family? Have I been really intentional? Do I understand how my children see me? You know, this is a really important thing. We don't realize. A really quick example that I often will give when we're facilitating is, you know, I had someone in the Creating Positive Energy workshop actually years ago, probably 10, 12 years ago now,
right,
who said, you know, we were talking about intention and we were talking about non-judgment. And she said, you mean that I'm not supposed to be upset that my 16-year-old son has come home and he's failed his chemistry exam? You know, and I said, well, you know, tell me about the conversation. Would it be all right for you to share with the group? Like, what was your conversation like? And she said, well, you know, I told him like he was, you know, really awkward in school early on in his life. He really struggled with social, you know, making friends. But when he turned sort of 8 or 9, he was really good in math and science. And so he suddenly, you know, started to really flourish. And so I've really encouraged him into the sciences and he's done really, really well. But all of a sudden now at 16, when he's starting to prepare for university, his grades are floundering. And in particular, his chemistry hasn't done well. And I said, well, what was the conversation like when you talked to him about it? And she said, well, I told him that I was disappointed and that, you know, I didn't understand because, you know, he wasn't going to meet his potential and that he's mm-hmm. so capable. And so I looked out to the class and I said, what do you think her son heard?
Yeah. Yeah.
What he heard was, I've let mom down. I've disappointed my mother, right? That's what they hear. That's not what she said, and it's not what she meant, but it's what he heard. So when we do a deep evaluation of what my true intention is, we got to dig pretty deep because a lot of times we're interfering in other people's lives because I'll feel better.
That importance of language is amazing. Like the use of language and the choice of words. Like,
it's huge.
It's astounding.
It's huge. Mm-hmm. So our ability to really evaluate, you know, one of the things that I say is, again, it's that self-centered, turn inward and really ask the hard question. What's my true intention here? Mm. I'll feel better if he does well in chemistry because then I'll know he's on his way to university. You know, she could have had a very different conversation with him. Well, tell me what your chemistry class is like. What's your teacher like? Mm-hmm. You know, it's possible that he's for the first time met a girl he really likes and he's distracted. She's never going to know any of that because we don't know how to have those meaningful conversations because we haven't done the evaluation of what's my real intention here.
Yeah.
So her intention was he needs to improve his grades, but her intention could have been, I really want to hear from him. I want to know what's going on for him. I want to know what it's like for him. That's a very different energy.
If we bring that into the context of the community farm and the workshop you're going to do here, and you employ or apply deliberate intention, can you already foresee what some of the elements would be that you would be facilitating or teaching people or giving people the tools within the farm context?
So there's lots of different tools that we'll share. Mm-hmm. But the thing about it is we tend to want to separate it. So I'm a big proponent of not separating
yes.
things, mm-hmm. meaning that we'll get someone if I use a corporate example, we'll get people in the transportation industry or someone in a client in the banking industry and financial, and they'll say it has to be unique to financial.
Oh, right.
Has to be unique for transportation.
Why is that?
Well, because we all think we're special and we all think finance is really special and unique or transportation is really unique. It's exclusive. We have different needs, but our work is with the human. Mm-hmm. Our work is with the human. So whether it's at the farm or it's in your home or it's at work, it's we need to work on ourselves and we need to connect with the human. So what is my true intention when I come onto the farm property? You know, when I come to contribute, why am I coming to contribute? You know, what are my real intentions when I'm here? Those are important questions to ask if that's, you know, if they're coming to the farm, for example, to volunteer.
If I'm hearing you correctly, the word that comes to mind for me is transformational, in the sense that what you learn in that you can take this, it's not exclusive. You could apply it from the corporate world into family, into the individual, into the church. It's just transformational in the sense that it could be applied everywhere.
Absolutely.
You learn it once, but it can spread all
throughout. Absolutely. So one of the things that our tagline with our company is life-changing leadership. Mm-hmm. Well, we didn't make that up. We didn't choose that as a company. Mm-hmm. Our clients kept saying, this has been a life-changing experience for me. I'm not the same person. I go into every meeting differently. I'm intentional about what comes out of my mouth. I plan. I slow down. I listen with incredible intensity, and I didn't before. And I take these skills home with my children. You know, I listen to them differently. I ask questions. Instead of telling them who their friends should be and how they should dress, I ask them great questions and allow them to explore who they are. So absolutely transformational. I mean, that is, you know, life-changing is what we've been told. And eventually we just had to adopt it because we just heard it over and over and over again. And, right. You know, for the first 10 years we were in business, we didn't have a tagline. And it wasn't until we just kept hearing it over and over again.
So looking forward, can you draw a picture of the future in the context of the community market farm, let's say, where the pathway to well-being and deliberate intention are in effect? What do you see happening?
Oh, that's a huge question. You know, I think in any community, whether it's a business community or the farm market farm community, when people are working on themselves, there's a tendency for when there's a problem or a conflict or a disagreement, there's a tendency for the individuals to go within and say, why am I upset here? We live in a world that says, you know, if only you would change the way you behave or the things you do, I would feel better. This work is about actually doing the evaluation to say, why did I get triggered in that meeting? What is it that upset me here? Is my ego triggered? Do I need to win? Do I need to be right? Those are hard questions for each of us to ask, but they're critical questions. So I would anticipate that that individuals within the community would start to ask some of those questions of themselves in the moments when there's disagreement or there's a problem or a challenge, that individuals would begin to ask those questions. Why am I upset here? Mm-hmm. Is it mine? Is it actually mine or someone else's? You know, we like to get into other people's business. We're great at judging other people. And part of this work is really understanding that and challenging it.
Mm-hmm. You may have answered this then already. The next question was about the corporate business and government organizations and clients that you've worked with. So if you take what you've been teaching them or facilitating with them and you apply that to the market farm, are there similar things that filter in and through, or is it a complete different kettle of fish?
No, there's common threads through all of it because we're all human. Whether we're working on the farm or we're working in a corporate environment, we're human. And so we'll see common threads throughout everything, whether it's our home or our community or our corporation. I think some of those common things are that, you know, conflict is really important. Debate and disagreement is really important for change and for progress. It's not a bad thing. It's how we handle those differences. It's how we manage and navigate through difficulties. You know, it's like a marriage. You know, it's easy when things are great, when we're all getting along really fine. That's the easy part. Mm-hmm. A marriage is defined by the tough stuff. You know, it's not defined by the easy moments. Well, business is the same. And so is the community farm. You know, how do we work together? How do we listen to each other? How do we manage our egos appropriately so that we're not being hijacked? And part of it is understanding the science. We do a lot of work in the area of science to understand how our bodies react to stress, what it does to the brain, how the brain can easily get hijacked, and how do we manage that? So I would expect to see the same types of things happening at the farm where people slow down a little bit. They do more inward reflection about why they might be upset or triggered, as opposed to an outward, an outward focus or an outward judgment. And those are pretty typical things that we see.
I guess another follow-on question to that would be, the farm works with a lot of volunteers. Corporate world works with a lot of paid employees. Do you think that there's a different mindset that comes into working with volunteers and working with employees? Or is that what you're describing about looking at the human, that again is just that works across the board? It doesn't matter, volunteer or employee.
I think there's differences in the sense that, volunteers can be probably a little more fickle. And I don't mean that as a negative. It's just that life happens. And so if you have to give up something, it's often, you'll give up your, and so they're not as, and I don't want this to appear negative. It's just sometimes can't be as relied on as an employee. But that doesn't mean, even employees often go to work just for the paycheck because they need to put food on the table and their heart's not really in it. So I think that can occur anywhere. I'm not really sure that there's a whole lot of difference. I think that it really is about how do we interact with each other and leadership, whether it's the community leadership, community market farm leadership, or whether it's in the business world, mm-hmm. It's how we engage with people that really is how we get results. And that's probably the key.
Do you think in corporate world, there's services or products that get produced or manufactured? The farm, obviously, their main thing is growing vegetables and sending out vegetable boxes and things. Do you think that the deliberate intention of actually producing and making the box for each of the clients, can that be seen through the effort from the farm down to the client when they receive the box?
That's a lovely question. I like that question. Because what we're talking about is energy.
Yeah.
I get a veg box.
Okay.
And I can feel the love when I get it.
How do you feel that? How does it come across to you?
But it's because I've been doing this work for 20 years. I've been slowing down and connecting with myself. We can't feel properly when we're running at breakneck speed, ticking boxes and trying to just get stuff done. I've got to meet my key performance indicators, right? I've got to do this. I've got to do that. That's not a bad thing. Those aren't bad things. Performance is important in business. And at the farm, producing is important. It's their whole goal and purpose. The difference is, are we slowing down enough to do it with intention? Is there, when I get my veg box, I can feel the difference than when I go to a supermarket and buy my apples in a plastic bag.
Yeah.
In crinkly plastic. Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I don't have a judgment around it. For me, it feels different. And so part of it is that, we work with clients who have a really important mission, and I can tell the difference between clients we work with who have a meaningful purpose mm-hmm. that their employees really grab onto, and those organizations that don't, that their purpose is making money and there isn't a lot beyond that. Mm-hmm. And you can feel the difference when you're working with those people, when you're speaking with them. And part of our role is to actually help them understand that without judgment, in order so that they might decide that they want to work on creating a more meaningful purpose to their business activities. And it's one of the things that Besovern has is a meaningful purpose. It's why people feel good when they come here.
Yes.
And it's why they love getting their veg boxes.
Yes. I like that aspect about the energy that's the latent energy that's in there.
I think people don't realize that everything is energy. We're energy. Mm-hmm. We're energy beings. Everything is energy. And energy, it's important for when we work with leaders, for example, and individuals in this type of workshop, it's sometimes the words are really important, but also the energy that we give out when we're speaking to someone. People will often say, how do you facilitate through Zoom? I mean, you lose so much of the context within Zoom. And we say, we don't lose the context at all. Zoom's a great medium. MS Teams is a great medium to meet people in, but it's because we know how to deliver information with the energy of care and love and compassion in a way that people can hear it. Mm-hmm. So energy is incredibly important. And it sounds woohoo, but it isn't. It's science. It's science.
Mm. Woohoo. Yeah. I like that term, woohoo.
Yeah, but it's not. It's science. Everything is energy.
Yes.
How we make people feel really matters.
Yes. Yes.
And our products and services, how they make people feel really matters. One of the things that might be kind of fun to play with in this discussion is thoughts are electrical and emotions are magnetic. Okay. So when I look someone in the eye and I acknowledge them and I thank them, but I do it with really loving energy, they feel that. And I often get a great smile back.
Yeah.
That's meaningful.
Interesting that you say that, because the one thing that I've picked up on since you came in here today is that you really lock eye contact. You really do. And at first I was trying to figure out, okay, am I comfortable with this or am I not comfortable with this? But now that you've been explaining it, I understand. Like that's one of the tools for you to sort of say, hey, I hear you. I see you. We're connecting right now. I'm offering that, you know, connection to have with you. Am I reading that correctly?
Well, I think so. And I hope that that you can feel it as well.
Oh, I do.
Right. Yeah. The idea is that we can make people feel comfortable, but we have to do our own work first. And, you know, I often call it organic influence. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to, I mean, how many people are out there teaching other people how to influence that, you know, say this and don't say that. I mean, leaders are taught all the time to say the right thing and be really careful about this, but it's really about the energy that they put forward in a meeting. It's critical. You can teach them to say all the politically correct words.
Yes.
But if they've got a story in their head about that person and how they dislike that person and how that person creates so much extra work for them, doesn't matter what the words are they use, that person is going to feel their frustration, feel their overwhelmment, feel their animosity towards them. Employees and other people are very savvy and they're very sensitive to people's energy. So when that leader or that individual walks into the room and says, my real intention here is to understand the perspective of the other person, and it matters to me, so I'm going to slow down. I'm really going to listen. I'd really like to get their perspective. That person feels that.
Right.
And they're much more likely to open up and share.
I guess my question around that was, if you're looking at somebody and you're giving them that space, there are people that will look at it and feel intimidated. They'll be like, why are you looking at me this way? In that there could be an abstraction of that moment, that where your intention it misfires.
Absolutely. That can happen.
Right.
And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. The key is for me not to have a story about it, not get triggered by it,
sure,
and not get, you know, upset about it or have a judgment.
Mostly that.
We're all different. We're all different.
Yeah.
The goal is, you know, to try to make people feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And safe. You know, people need to feel safe and they need to feel connection with other humans, mm-hmm, not isolation.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Interesting. And you're still looking at me straight on.
Sorry. I'm obviously not making you feel comfortable.
No, I'm all right with it. It's just, yeah, you can really feel it. I wanted to throw this out there. If one can form a community farm or any other complex social network under, let's call it, what is your social prescription, would disagreements still exist? So would there still be a potential for conflict or organizational breakdown? And if so, how could they be attended to and resolved?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Disagreement's going to happen. It's important. We're all different. Mm-hmm. We need diversity. We need multiple perspectives. And just because I have a perspective, it's my truth. It's not your truth, right? You're going to have a different perspective. The question is, what do we do with that as a group of people managing through complexity? So, you know, what we typically see is a better ability to listen. it matters that we understand the other person's perspective. Can we perspective take? Can I try to understand your perspective and stand in your shoes for a moment and look at the problem from your perspective and have you look at the problem from my perspective? Mm-hmm. So conflict, disagreement, all of that is going to continue. We don't want everything to go to a homogeneous, flat environment. That's not good for anyone. We want diversity. We want as much differing views as possible. The key, what we see happen, is we see people listen better. We see more collaboration. We see perspective taking. We see a lot more creativity and innovation where people are saying, well, I never thought of that, but actually it sounds like a good idea. Let's try that. What we see is people managing their egos much better. So again, they're going inside and doing that personal work. Why am I upset here? Oh, right. It's because I would really like everyone to agree with me. And if I really want everyone to agree with me, probably the other people would really like them, everyone to agree with them. Mm-hmm. You know. So now how can I be flexible? How can I be as collaborative as possible?
I think from one of the videos I saw, one of the speaking engagements you gave, you brought up the idea of the CEO and that the CEO can admit to not having all the answers.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Imagine that. I mean, I work with a lot of CEOs around the world and, you know, they're just human beings just like the rest of us and they're fallible just like the rest of us. Mm-hmm. And one of the things in the old, you know, I often refer to old energy organizations versus new energy organizations and, you know, this belief that they have to have all the answers and they have to direct all the time and plan all the time. And, you know, it's first of all, not possible. And secondly, you know, the more diverse responses we get to a challenge or a problem, the more likely we're going to come up with a really good solution. Having one person make decisions all the time for large, complex organizations is mm-hmm. quite dangerous, actually. So, yeah, the other thing that's really important is we're going into some of the most challenging times ahead of us. And CEOs often feel very isolated and alone. And so our ability to recognize that, and I think things are getting better in the sense that there's a permission to not be perfect and to not have all the answers. It's really important.
Yeah, I think the words that came out of that panel was you said that it allowed the CEO to feel a lot more open to opportunity, open to change, open to new direction.
And think about it. How many companies are going to have to make a 90-degree turn in the next 5 years? I mean, with AI coming on full and other things changing, the climate changes, everything that we're dealing with, political changes, we're going to have to be very creative and very flexible.
Right.
So extremely important.
Yeah.
And you know, those that are running large, complex organizations are going to need a whole team of people around them that they trust and that they can collaborate together with and not work in isolation.
Mm-hmm. Finally, I wanted to ask, how scalable do you envision this? If the self is explored as you see it successfully, with intentional reflection, have you thought through its potential for growth? What is the maximum growth potential?
Endless. Endless. This is the ripple effect. You know, we have said for 22 years that we've been doing leadership development, that it's one leader at a time. We change the world one leader at a time, one person at a time. This isn't about the whole company or the whole community. It's one person at a time. But that person has a ripple effect within their own scope, within their own world of their families, their community. So it has an endless potential to create really positive communities, one person at a time. And it sounds, you know, very, you know, all very lovely, but we've seen it. I mean, we've seen it firsthand, large, complex, you know, some of our clients are big global organizations that will say, you know, when we first started working with you 10 years ago, we were a certain way. Now we're very different. We communicate differently. We treat each other differently. We listen differently. We're much more collaborative. We have no conflict, very little conflict. They have disagreement. They have good debate, but they don't have conflict. you know, the negative, nasty kind of conflict that they would have seen. So the ripple effect, it's huge.
Just expanding on that before we go, if someone's in a situation where they have some of this, what you're saying, or they feel they identify with what you're speaking about, but they find themselves in an environment where this just is not being received, do you have any advice to them?
So I don't, you know, advice is not something that I would normally do. I typically would ask lots of questions and allow the person to get where they need to go that feels right for them.
That's the facilitating
aspect. Yeah. And the coaching part of it. I mean, the world is a very complex place and individual people's lives are complicated. Mm-hmm. They're not straightforward. You know, each individual person is the expert in their own lives. They know what is right for them. Our role is to create a really safe space for them to explore it and to allow their natural higher self evolve and emerge so that they can make great decisions in their own life. So there isn't one right answer to that. You know, there is going to be lots of changes where some organizations over the next 5 years, many of them will not survive because they don't have a clear, meaningful purpose. Others will find their meaningful purpose and thrive and really attract the right kind of employee, the good alignment. I mean, the farm is doing a great job of that, attracting really great people that, you know, really want to give back and really appreciate what the farm does. So it's being clear about, you know, who you are and what you stand for. And so that individual in that situation needs to do that work themselves to decide whether or not it's appropriate to stay or to leave or something in between.
Well, Yvonne, thank you.
You're welcome.
It's been a pleasure. Absolutely. If you would like to meet Yvonne in person and take part in her workshop, Creating Positive Energy, on Saturday, April 20th from 9:30 a.m. Yep. to 4:30 p.m. You can do so here at Bosavern Community Farm. Book your place at the What's On page at bosavernecommunityfarm.org.uk or changeinnovators.com, where you go to the our programs list in the top menu and scroll down to Creating Positive Energy, where you will find all the enrollment information plus much more of what Yvonne's company does. Would you like anything more? Would you like to say anything more about the workshop or?
No, I just hope that people support it. This is all in support of the farm.
Right.
So, you know, this is a donation to the farm. It's important to support this farm. I really believe in it. And so I'm hoping we'll get lots of people out.
And they're really happy to have you. I mean, really happy to have you here. Oh, price point. I didn't mention that. Do you?
I think it's 40 pounds.
Right.
And if there is a need for some concession on that, then it's just approach the farm and they'll assist.
Terrific.
So we want to make sure it's accessible to people.
Excellent. Terrific. Well, once again, thank you. It's absolutely been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Twist and Sprout is a podcast brought to you by Bosavern Community Farm and hosted by me, Carl Group. We host one episode on the 15th of every month. You can find and subscribe to Twist and Sprout wherever you subscribe to your podcasts. We love it if you could share us as well with folks who you think would appreciate our content. Until we see you again in May, we wish you good health and a bounty of amazingness. Twist and Sprout is a production of themangolab.com.